This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. With the 4th of July at hand, it's a pretty good bet many of us have a backyard barbecue in our plans, or maybe catching a fireworks show, maybe even doing one of your own in your backyard. That got us thinking about the ways Michiganders have marked the big national holiday over the centuries. And for that, of course, we turn to our official Stateside historian. Bill Loomis writes for the Detroit News, and he's the author of Detroit's Delectable Past, Two Centuries of Frog Legs, Pigeon Pie, and Drugstore Whiskey. Welcome back, Bill.
Hi, Cindy. Thanks for having me.
Well, it certainly seems that none other than John Adams was the one who kind of threw down the gauntlet and told us, go out and celebrate Independence Day.
Yeah, absolutely. And almost everything he listed in the famous letter to his wife about how this should be a solemn day and should for the history be celebrated, all those things people took literally. So that is a quote that comes up repeatedly every year in the newspapers. And with these civic groups that are planning their holidays, they use that as kind of a mission statement.
In fact, here it is. He wrote to Abigail and he talked about this Independence Day. And he said it ought to be commemorated as the day of deliverance by solemn acts of devotion to God Almighty. I don't think we have a lot of that today.
Not anymore.
It ought to be solemnized with pomp and parade, with shows, games, sports, guns, bells, bonfires, and illuminations from one end of this confinement continent to the other from this time forward forevermore. So we Americans went, yeah. Sounds pretty good. Sounds like a party.
Right, right, exactly. And illuminations are fireworks, so, yes. You know, everything on there.
Well, take us back, Bill Loomis, to those early 4th of July celebrations.
Well, the earliest ones really kind of began in Philadelphia. They didn't occur in Detroit until after really the War of 1812, because there just weren't that many Americans that lived in Detroit.
And so the French who were here were not celebrating
the 4th of July. Yeah, they didn't get it. They had their own things, but they went along with it once it started picking up and once the immigration of New Englanders really came into the city.
So the New Englanders were celebrating mm-hmm. through the end of the 18th century, and then we start getting into the early 1800s, and mm-hmm. they've moved to Detroit.
Absolutely.
So what did they bring with them?
And they brought with them a lot of their kind of obscure celebrations that we don't see anymore, like the March of the Horribles.
What was the March of the Horribles?
That was like a Mardi Gras parade, if you will. The adults would dress up, the men would dress up in these kind of goofy outfits and march around. That was a very popular New England celebration that occurred. I found it in a record in 1838 in Northville, and they were still doing the March of the Horribles.
Love that name. I think
know.
Somebody needs to revive the March of the Horribles.
And they were and launching anvils. That was another practice that was quite common. Anvils, you know, they weigh about 100 pounds.
Yes.
And you'd fill up the bottom, which had which was concave, with gunpowder. And they'd seal it with the one report I said seal it with bent playing cards to keep the gunpowder in.
Okay.
They'd put it down and they'd light it and it would blast off about 100, 200 feet. And that was an exciting thing to do.
That was exciting. Probably dangerous.
Incredibly dangerous.
I mean.
But, you know, that was just something that happened. They blew off lots of muskets and lots of blank cartridges. And they didn't have fireworks. They would throw flaming balls of cotton back and forth. That was something else they did. They'd soak cotton balls in turpentine and kind of play a catch. Sometimes they'd coat their hands with flour paste to keep from getting burned. But it didn't really work for a while.
So as the 19th century went on then, it just kind of gelled. There were parades.
Yeah, exactly. Now, that wasn't all. They didn't all do just fireworks. They had parades. They had they really did begin by going to church. But they'd have parades. Lewis Cass's farm was a parade ground. Hmm. And they would have an oration and a reading of the Declaration of Independence. So it was a little more solemn, but they definitely – and they didn't all have the glorious fireworks that we have today. But they certainly could blow off cannons and muskets, and they did plenty of that.
And they had them there to do.
Yes, they
was,
did.
Was eating a part of this too, the way it has become for us today?
Oh, yeah. Eating was a big part of 4th of July. Early on, they didn't have the kind of things we'd recognize. They had a lot of turtle soup. And maybe roast oysters was common, and different puddings and things. But later on, they would have picnics, and it was a little different. They would a lot of times bring a pre-roasted like veal or something like that, and cut that up. They had deviled eggs. They had lots of what they used to call bill of fare included hard-boiled eggs and deviled eggs. They ate on later on around 1890s. They started eating on wooden plates, and those were the equivalent of our paper plates.
Okay.
They would eat those. They were nice and light, and then you could just throw them away or burn them. They used what were called Japanese napkins that were made out of rice paper. One of the problems they had with sandwiches was they didn't have a way to keep them from getting dried out.
Mm.
They had later something called paraffin paper, which was a wax paper, but it was not common. So it was hard, and there were no Tupperware, obviously. So
no, didn't have those little glad snap.
Yeah, right. One suggestion from a housewife said, put the sandwiches in old candy boxes because they were kind of small. And you could use them like that. But they would get ice from they sold ice at the train stations a lot of times. So they'd get a block of ice and wrap it in paper, and that would keep the cucumbers cold.
I'm speaking with Bill Loomis, who is the author of Detroit's Delectable Past, 2 Centuries of Frog Legs, Pigeon Pie, and Drugstore Whiskey. And we'd like to get Bill in at each holiday to kind of look back and see how we celebrated in Michigan. And, of course, really with Detroit being the largest city in Michigan, Detroit kind of set the standard, didn't it, Bill, as far as what the official celebrations were like?
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of like now the big celebrations were in Detroit, mm-hmm. but every little community had their own. And, in fact, Detroit didn't have a citywide fireworks. They had – each neighborhood had their own.
Okay.
They had a grand parade, they called it, and this was after the Civil War. They had, you know, floats and parades. And I mean, anybody who was anybody was in the parade. The parade at one point was 5 miles long all the way down Woodward. The firemen alone were 1 mile long.
That's a serious
so
parade.
Everybody wanted to be in. I think there's more people in the parade than watching the parade.
And boat rides, I take it, because you were on the river.
Yeah, boat rides. There was in 1870s, there were 100,000 people that went to Belle Isle and to some of the other little neighborhoods because it's a little cooler.
Mm.
And that was big fun to go on the boat rides up and down the river and stuff.
Now, you mentioned the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Let's revisit the Civil War because there was a big, big victory on 4th of July, wasn't there?
Yeah, the Siege of Vicksburg mm-hmm. was a major victory for the Union. And the dispatches of the victory came right on the 4th of July day.
Right there in 1863, right?
Yeah, that's right. So during the Civil War, the celebrations were a little less quaint and fun and much more intense and emotional. They used to light bonfires on 4th of July, mm-hmm. children again. That was a very common thing. And during the Civil War, they'd have them all the way up and down Woodward, these bonfires and down the major thoroughfares. And it was much more immediate. The thought of losing the country or the Union was much more real.
Yes. In fact, I think about the Battle of Gettysburg going on 150 years ago right now.
That's right.
Leading up to the 4th of July. So
yeah.
There was some very serious.
Yeah, there was a certain serious undertone. Aspect to the whole thing. And was not just like other parades.
So as we move beyond the Civil War, we get into the 20th century.
Yeah.
I get the feeling from reading your piece in the Detroit, things really really got dangerous.
Yeah, it was amazing how that happened. Fireworks that children was the domain of children basically, and teenagers, they were not like just noisemakers. They were not – firecrackers were a separate entity.
Okay.
If you read the classifieds right around the 4th of July, they're selling fireworks, you know, big ads for fireworks in the newspapers. And so this was like around 1868 up through 1910. And these – you know, one fellow selling Navy ordnance, signaling ordnance, and dynamite caps strong enough to blow cars off of rails. And they would have cannon crackers and torpedo crackers, which were filled with dynamite. And they – small amounts, and they would shoot off and like rockets. And it was just – you know, you just think, what were these parents thinking? Because the next day they would list all the injuries in the paper on the 5th of July.
Mm-mm-mm.
They would have a table and they would show the list of all the possible injuries. And they were horrific. I mean, starting from age 2 on up to adults. And then how many occurred. The New York Times reported nationwide, I think it was 1909, 38 people died. And a couple thousand were seriously injured. Another problem they had was people would get lockjaw from tetanus from the powder burns. It opened up their skin to this powder would go deep into the skin. So on top of losing your fingers, you got these other problems
as well.
Got
tetanus to deal with as well.
Really?
And you talk about some of the awful pranks that were pulled. Like you were talking about a doctor on Michigan Avenue. The poor guy's just trying to crank his car in 1902.
I know. It was sort of like, imagine those old Little Rascals silent movies you know, but it wasn't funny. And they would really throw these fireworks into open street cars, and they throw them at dogs and horses.
This poor doctor wound up getting his face smashed into the grill of his car.
Right. Yeah. Well, it startled him, and he jumped up and smashed his head into the car. Another lady just walking down the street, and they fired a rocket and it hit her in the ear. So, I mean, these were awful, and most of the people were not doing anything. You know, just trying to get to work.
So the idea, I guess, is you were going to sacrifice fingers to celebrate the independence of the nation.
It's part of patriotism, of some weird thinking, but that was kind of the thinking until 1903, when there was a campaign. Actually, what started it was the city of Portland, Maine, was burned to the ground from fireworks, people throwing fireworks. That was kind of a wake-up call. And they started a campaign to have what they used to call safe and sane 4th of July. And by 1910, they did.
So they began to outlaw things and regulate things.
The big fireworks with dynamite in them. And they had very short fuses. These were not, if you look at the pictures of the kids in the paper, these things are like a foot long. They're just enormous. Mm-hmm. And so they switched over to smaller fireworks and that sort of thing.
And then you kind of track the fact that as you get into the early 20th century, and maybe they had to blowing up of dynamite, got into things like baseball and picnics, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. The baseball games were everywhere. If you look at the list on 4th of July, you can find every neighborhood had an amateur baseball game. And the Tigers, you could go see the Tigers play. Cleveland or Toledo, they would play. And so that went on all day. They would have sometimes 2-3 games in one day. And it would be J.L. Hudson's versus some other local Stroh's Beer or something like that. Every group had an amateur team. And it was a beautiful, beautiful day. You know, they would have a picnic, and there was the lemonade guy and the different guys selling firecrackers, of course. He was everywhere. You'd spread out your enameled. They called them enameled cloth. It was sort of an oiled cloth that you could sit on.
All right.
And just have a wonderful day.
And when did we begin to see, particularly in Detroit, I mean, they just had the huge International Freedom Fireworks, and I know Hudson's for years sponsored it.
Yeah.
And it's one of the spectacular displays in the entire nation. Where did that begin and when?
That really began in Detroit after the turn of the century.
Okay.
There were neighborhood fireworks. Mm. There was not a citywide firework in Detroit. So you'd go to the North Woodward Residents Association fireworks, and I think that was, or the Clark Park had big ones.
Mm-hmm.
And they would get thousands of people, but not like now with a million spectators.
Sure.
But they would get, say, 20,000 people. And, you know, the descriptions of these fireworks were pretty cool. The Eiffel Tower they would do, and the Niagara Falls, and they would blow them off. And then afterward, they might have a dance or something else. So it went on all night long. But, that came later after the 1910s.
Well, it certainly seems, Bill Loomis, as we think about the 4th of July, and then you contrast that with Memorial Day. I mean, Memorial Day with those very somber roots.
Yeah.
This one, we really did have permission to go out and celebrate.
Oh, yeah. This was the go-nuts thing, and this was get in the parade. And they'd have, you know, these elaborate floats, everybody was involved. They really just loved it.
Well, I'm happy to kind of think that in one respect we have gotten safer as the decades have gone on. You don't have quite as many, you don't have pages and pages of accidents and maimings because people were celebrating the 4th. That's terrible.
Yeah, even they thought that was getting way out of control. So that's good to know.
So it sounds like overall we have gotten a little more smart. And maybe a little more sedate in our 4th of July celebrations.
Yeah, you know, you forget. You think, wow, it's kind of wild on 4th of July night, but it's really nothing like it used to be. So, yes, it's a lot better. And it's a lot more fun, I think.
Bill Loomis, writer for the Detroit News, also the author of Detroit's Delectable Past, 2 Centuries of Frog Legs, Pigeon Pie, and Drugstore Whiskey. Thanks for the look back over the years, Bill.
Thanks, Cindy.